Hello, and welcome to the Project Elected podcast. Project Elect is a nonpartisan nonprofit whose goal is pretty simple. We want to get more Latter-day Saint women involved in public service. On this podcast, we interview amazing Latter-day Saint women who are involved in public service. Hi, my name is Audrey Perry Martin. I'm the founder of Project Elect and the host of this podcast.
Today, I am very excited to be talking to Rachel Terry. She is running for Attorney General in Utah, and we have a lot to discuss. She's got a great background. This is the first office she's running for, so we're excited to talk about that. Rachel, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for letting me be here. I'm excited.
Yeah, me too. We have a lot of mutual friends, we just found out. So it's time we finally chatted. So Rachel, I'm interested in your background and kind of your experiences. I know obviously you're an attorney, you're running for Attorney General, but what led you to run for Attorney General in Utah?
Like you mentioned, I'm an attorney. I've been practicing for about 20 years. And admittedly, I don't tell everyone this, the first few years in law practice were not my favorite, and law school was hard for me. And so that I've gotten to the part of my career where I am excited about the law, I'm excited about what I do, and that I really want to be the lawyer for the state of Utah would probably surprise my 27-year-old self. But I'm really passionate about the power that attorneys and the Attorney General specifically can have on people's lives and on shaping the state of Utah. And so when our current Attorney General, Sean Reyes, announced that he was not going to run, which was right before Christmas, I thought, I need to jump into this. I care about it a lot. I care about the people. I'm passionate about the work. I know how to do the work. And I just wanted to give the state another option for how we lead that part of our state and the kind of policies and temperament that we offer to the state of Utah as the Attorney General. So it was a big decision. Of course, it was right before Christmas, and I didn't know what it would mean for me professionally. And my family was really great in saying, okay, if this is something you care about, we'll get behind you. And they've been really good sports since then.
That's fantastic. So I know you've had several different legal jobs. So tell me about those and what really inspired you to run? Like why, besides just being an awesome attorney general, which I'm sure you would be, what in your experience has led you to this point?
I will say that I think I'm uniquely qualified for this position because of my experience. So I started my career in private practice. I was with a law firm called Fabian Clendenin. It's called Fabian Van Cott now. It's here in Salt Lake. It's a great law firm. Spent 8 years there, but I'd always wanted to be doing something for the public good. So after 8 years, I left. I worked for the Board of Education for 2 years and then went to the Attorney General's office and did civil rights litigation. And civil rights litigation can be very broad. I represented universities in some very public cases, some sexual assault cases. One in particular people may be familiar with was Lauren McCluskey, who was murdered on the University of Utah campus. I represented the university there, represented other universities in Title IX and sexual assault cases. But then I also got to do some cases where it was about, did closing a bank violate the Constitution? What about a trade secret involving space technology? Represent correction officers, law enforcement officers. So this super broad experience working for the Attorney General's office. And the work was really fun, really dynamic. And when you meet with those people and you hear their stories and the decisions they made, it was really impactful. And especially impactful in that space was when we could see that the government had made a mistake. Helping those institutions figure out a way to make it right as best as they could and to improve from that. So I loved that work. I left for a year, went and was the deputy director for the League of Cities and Towns in Utah, which is the advocacy and engagement organization for all municipalities in the state. Every state has one. I loved that work. Engaging with mayors and city council members and the people who are making our cities work was an amazing experience because I learned that's where the real work gets done. They're the ones who are making sure that the garbage gets taken out, that we have power on in Bountiful, that the rec leagues are happening. So that was great. And then I was recruited to become the director for the Utah Division of Risk Management, which a lot of people would not know what risk management is because it's the insurance part of the state. It provides insurance to school districts and state agencies and universities, and you think, oh, blah, insurance, that's no fun. But it's really fun because when something gets broken, we fix it. When there's litigation, we work with the Attorney General's office on it. A fire, a flood comes, we help them navigate that process to restoring the property. And then I also get to help advise on legislation to make sure it doesn't create risk for the state or where it is that we mitigate that risk. And I provide a lot of training to our entities. Yesterday, I did a Title IX training to school principals, secondary school principals. And so these experiences have really shaped how I feel about the law, how I feel about what attorneys can do for the state and how they can guide and direct good policy and be really supportive when things go wrong. And so that those experiences led me to be brave enough to jump into the Attorney General's office race, because having never run before, I've been looking at this for probably 15 years, going to organizations who put on training like Real Women Run and Women's Leadership Institute that says, this is what you can do. This is how you run for office. Here are the things you think about. I've been going to those for years, but to actually sign up, to actually put my name on a list of candidates, that was a big, scary experience. And I've been really pleasantly surprised by the support that I've received from people. And it's what's helped me jump in. My personal background that also made it a little scarier is I grew up outside of Idaho Falls in a rural area. We had an acre. We had chickens and dogs and cats and sheep and horses, and pigs were mean. We canned our own vegetables. My sister and I would wander the neighborhood and for entertainment, throw sticks in the ditch. I didn't come from a lot of money. Had a really great childhood, but not one that was super politically active. And I've been in public practice for a long time, so I can't self-fund a campaign. I don't have a couple hundred thousand dollars in my bank account to do this. So that was really intimidating. But when you have people around you that say, you can do this and we'll help you do it, it's helped me be brave and say, yes, I do have the right experience. Yes, I am smart enough and capable enough to lead the Attorney General's office to stand up for the state of Utah. And so here I am. Here I am running for Attorney General for the state of Utah. It's a big leap, but it's been really good.
That's fantastic. And you said that you've been looking at this for 15 years, going to these events, going to these meetings, learning more about it. Were those helpful to you? I think we're always trying to encourage women to run. And if it takes 15 years, it takes 15 years. That's fine. What helped you? What part of those was helpful?
A couple of things. One is just being around other like-minded women who also have a passion for public service. And when you look around the room, you're like, yeah, we're all in this. We all want to do this. Not all of them have jumped in either, but they've gone and they've learned. And then other things, just hearing from other women who have run for office. And they'll talk about things like, this is how I handled my signs. This is how I handled fundraising. And even little things you wouldn't even think about. I remember one training, it was a web call, and someone asked a question, which seems really silly, but it stuck with me. It's like, how do you handle like the hair and the makeup and your clothing? And I remember it was Mayor of Provo, Mayor Cafusi, and she said, I always have a blazer in my trunk. I always have a blazer in my car because I never know when I'm going to need to throw it on. And then just talking about how she tried to style and have it being part of her brand. And just those little things have really stuck with me over the years. And so much in life, and it's true in politics, is all about timing. So yes, it's taken me 15 years. Frankly, if we really go back, I was a girl state governor of Idaho in 1995. So it's been a minute, right? And when I was campaigning for this fake governor position, which was super fun, I remember telling everyone I was going to be the first female governor of Idaho, which still hasn't happened. And I don't live in Idaho anymore. I'm a Utahan through now. But it took a long time because the opportunities have to be right. And the timing in your life has to be right. And the experience needs to be right. And I just so happened that I have now had enough experience in my career that I felt very confident that I can do the job. I've now built a network of people who believe in me. And my kids are 13. So I have boy, girl twins. They're 13. Like, they're pretty functional on their own. So if I'm not here all the time, they can do it. My husband's career was in a place where he could take on more of the home responsibilities. And then of course, we've had the same attorney general for over a decade. So that role hasn't been open. Running for an incumbent was certainly not something I wanted to do because I worked for the incumbent. And so when the moment came, it just felt like the pieces had lined up, that God had laid out this path for me. And so I jumped in. And I'll share this for those who may be interested. When my family and I were trying to make this decision, and it's definitely a family decision for me, because making sure my kids were okay, that they knew, they can never really know what it's coming for them. They're 13. I don't really know. But I tried to tell them, like, I'm not going to be present as often. And I've been the one who's been around for all the things. And it's going to be really busy. I'm going to ask you to do hard things, like go and talk to strangers and all of that. And I'm like, and people aren't always going to be nice to me or to us. And you won't like that. So as we were talking about it, there's a lot of prayer involved too, because it's such a big decision to put yourself out there. And as I prayed about it, I'm like, please God, help open the path for me to figure this out. And I received a strong impression that the path had already been laid for me. I think about that almost every single day when I am tired, when I'm stressed, when I'm not sure how this is going to turn out. I remember that he laid it out for me. This year, we're studying the Book of Mormon, and I'm not fantastic at studying all the things that I should. But I've been really, really grateful that we're starting with the Book of Mormon and Nephi and Lehi's journey into the wilderness. And I keep thinking about them because they had no idea how it was going to turn out. They're just walking around in the wilderness. They don't know where it's going to end, and they don't know if it's going to work out. They don't know if they were going to die or not. They couldn't have seen the end from the beginning. And that's how I feel a little bit, is wandering around in the wilderness. But the scripture, by small and simple things, great things can come to pass. Like, I feel like in my own life, however this sorts out, however the race ends, something great has happened for me and I've grown, and it's been a really positive experience.
Incredible. And I love how you applied it to the story of them, Nephi and Lehi, leaving Jerusalem and going into the wilderness, because running for office it's a complete jump of faith, a leap of faith, and you don't know where it's going to end up. You have to have faith that it's going to work out. And especially if you've prayed about it and you've gotten the confirmation that it's time, then you go and you leap. And great for you for doing that. I also love how you talked about preparing your kids, because I think that's a question a lot of women have when they're running for office. They're worried about their family. And especially, I think, younger kids, certainly, because they need a lot of time. But the older kids who are going to notice the negative campaigning and actually be involved and maybe get some of that pushback more than younger kids are going to notice. How have your kids handled it? How have you guys handled the negative side of campaigning? Because it's always there, especially with a statewide office. You're not running for a city council race that nobody's paying attention to. So how do you deal with that?
It's been an interesting process, and actually has really opened my eyes to how my family operates. The most practical way that it's impacted us is the other day to Saturday, and I'm still working full time and I'm campaigning full time. So Saturdays are full work days, and I'm sitting in on my computer doing campaign and work stuff. And my daughter comes up and she's like, "Mom, I need you to take me to Michael's. I need this craft supply." And I'm like, "Honey, I can't. Go ask your dad." She's like, "No, he's really busy. He's putting up some shelves and then he's going to go duck hunting." And I'm like, okay. You have come to rely very much on me to be the parent who does all the things, who takes you to Michael's and orders your shoes. And in a really practical way, we've had to reconfigure and help them understand, like, you know, your dad is really capable and he wants to be there for you. And so it's shifting expectations. That's the practical side. And on the negative side, my husband was with me at an event and someone wasn't very nice to me. I was prepared for that. And this particular incident was not out of character for the space I was in, but it really bothered him. It was really hard for him. And we had to talk it through. Because one, I loved that he felt very protective of me. That made me feel loved. But also helping him prepare, that was just a teeny tiny taste of what we can expect over the next couple of months. And so I was actually glad he got to see it in on a small scale so he can prepare for it. It's not going to be fun. And we're going to do our very best to shield our kids from it. But they're going to be aware. And the way we've prepared for it is, I feel like we've been preparing it for a long time. Because of my work, I deal with some really hard, heavy cases. Dying in accidents, people being assaulted, some difficult First Amendment type questions, and I talk about them with my kids, and they've overheard my work phone calls. So we had prepared them. They knew that there are hard conversations in life and that there are hard things, but at the same time, we're still trying to shelter them from the worst parts of campaigning and helping them remember that their dad is perfectly capable of driving them to Michael's and ordering them some new lacrosse cleats. That part's been good.
That's fantastic. So I work in campaigns. I haven't run for office, but I work on a lot of campaigns. So sometimes I get really busy and my kids still want to come to me for all the things in like October of a presidential election year. And yes. I feel like it's been really good for them and my husband to have to take over for a certain amount of time. And it's great to have two parents you can go to for things instead of just one, right? It's good for their relationship.
It's really good.
It's good for everything. So it's, you know, it's, I like it.
I think so often, even for those of us who are really engaged, us women in the political space or professional space, doing what we do, we still so often take on these very traditional roles in our homes. And I'm happy to do it. Like, I like being the mom. I like being the one that's coordinating carpool. But it's really helpful for my kids to see that there are lots of ways for parents to contribute, and there's time and seasons, and that their dad can do things. It's good for them. And they haven't always seen that because I've taken on so much of those traditional tasks, and he makes breakfast and he helps pack the lunches and he makes sure they're getting to the right carpools now. And I think it's really good. I think there's a lot of good that comes from throwing yourself into hard things.
And mixing things up a bit and realizing you could do things maybe you didn't think you could do before or you hadn't even thought about before. So that's fantastic. It sounds like you're dealing with it really well in your family. So you talked a lot about public good and working for the public good and in public service. And one of the things that we're always trying to do at Project Elect is remind women that public service is service, because these LDS women, they serve all the time in a million different ways, but they don't really put that together that city council or school board or all these other things they could be doing is also service to their community. So how would you talk to them? How would you convince women that this is important?
One of the things that I would share with them is helping them understand that the skills that they're using in their service in their home and at church translates amazingly well into serving on a city council, in the legislature, as a commissioner. They translate really well because as you serve in church, as you serve in your home, you're organizational and multitasking, your empathy, your ability to listen, all of those are so needed in the public space. And some of the most effective people I've seen on school boards have also been really, came from being really active in their PTA or on their community council or whatever that looks like. They're able to translate that service from a more localized to a bigger picture on their school board. And then those who then can launch that into another sphere. Like, it is service. And the things that they're trying to accomplish within their own neighborhoods, they can scale to be even bigger for their city or their county or their state. What I really love about with some of these local offices, like city council, like what they're doing is providing things like youth activities and community activities and serving the elderly, which they do when they're serving a church or in their home or in their neighborhood. It just gets to be at a bigger scale. And so it's taking something that they already care about and love and scaling it up to expand for their communities.
Absolutely. And I love how you said that. I feel like explaining that you can do the grassroots stuff. You can do the stuff on the level PTA and serving and going to school board meetings and commenting, but you don't get a seat at the table to make the actual decisions unless you actually run for office. It's those people that are making the real decisions.
The real decisions that are shaping our lives. Women Lawyers of Utah this year, I was serving on the board and the chair gave us this little tiny chair lapel pin. It's just a cute tiny chair. And I get asked about it all the time. And what it stands for is at every table, I'll save you a seat. It's the decision-making table. I can't save you a seat if I'm not sitting there. I didn't get to sit at that table unless someone else opened up a seat for me. Now, I have not always been invited to the decision-making table. Sometimes I just plop myself in the chair at the table, uninvited, but because I want to be a part of those decisions, I just sit there. But then I can make space for others to show up and be heard and to help with those decisions. And when women just sit and say, I'll let someone else do it, or it's not really qualified, I'm like, baloney. You are smart and capable. I have watched you run the primary. Of course you can be at the table. You know how this works. You know how leadership works. And when women take those skills and their passion and their knowledge, and they show up to the decision-making table with it, it can be so powerful, because that change of perspective, that, you know, the viewpoint, also the love that they bring to that work, can really be transformational for the decisions that are made for our communities and our states.
And they really do have a unique perspective. Everyone does. And so saying you're not qualified, that's not right. They are qualified. They know what's going on in their community, and they know what people need, and they should be at that table, even if they have to plop themselves down on it, which I love that you just went up there and you joined the table. I've done that too. And it's scary, but it needs to happen.
It is scary. It needs to happen. It feels so weird just to be like, you know what? I'm going to sit here and I'm going to tell you what I think, and I'm going to make you listen. And it is not intuitive to a lot of women to do that. So for those of us who are doing it now, making sure that as we do it, we're inviting other women to come to the table, I think, is critical. Because if we just keep the same seats that we've always had, we're not going to make the broader impact that I think we can have as women, as community builders. And it's interesting that women downplay the importance of the other work that they're doing. Like the women who are running the PTA at my school, volunteering in my kids' classrooms, I am so grateful for them. Because what I also want to reinforce is that those women who donate, and men who donate their time in that space, allow me to do the things that I'm doing. I don't have time right now to be in my kids' schools, because I'm basically working two jobs, but those people do. And when they show up and they offer their time, their expertise, they allow others like me to be able to show up for running for office. So all of it is really important. And I'm so grateful for those who donate and serve.
As am I. And they're also getting all kinds of skills and experience and perspectives that will help them throughout their lives. So it's always good to be involved, right? What is an important personality trait or strength that you think somebody would need to be involved in their community? What strengths do you have that you think will make you a fantastic attorney general?
My particular strengths are my analytical skills, my communication skills, and my willingness to speak up. I would say fearlessness, but I don't think that's the right word, because it's not that I'm fearless. There is fear there of repercussions, consequences for speaking up and speaking out about the things that I care about. But it's being willing to speak up and speak out and serve anyway. I'm a super extrovert. I like being around people and introducing myself to new people. And my ability to network, and this is something that I think is unique to me based on my experiences, especially serving in the church community and my job, is bringing different stakeholders and building different coalitions. To be really good at this kind of work, you have to be willing to work with lots of different kinds of people who may or may not agree with you. And that's something that I've been able to do, is bring lots of different people to the table as we make hard decisions. In terms of, I think a lot of people, and women particularly, they think they have to be like me. They have to be really strong-willed externally, like visibly strong-willed and extroverted. And that's just not the case. Some of our most powerful leaders are quieter and have a quieter sense of leadership or leadership style. They're more introverted, but it takes all kinds. Like what I want people to know, and women who are thinking about running, is just because you don't have a big personality doesn't mean you don't bring something big to the table, that you can't be a very effective leader. I do have a big personality, as anyone will tell you. I say all kinds of things that maybe I shouldn't, because that's how I roll. But it takes all kinds sitting at the table to make this work and to be really effective. And I would say the number one thing that you have to have is a willingness to dive in. And for me, I think about it in terms of my family. My kids were younger. We're at this place where you could jump off this little ledge. It's 50 feet. You had ropes, and it was at this ski resort, and it's a ropes course. But you were supposed to be the one who jumped off the side, and then the ropes would catch you. And my kids were afraid, and so was I. Like, jumping off a 50-foot thing was really scary. But I kept doing it to show them that it was okay, that it was going to be fun and that they could do it. That's what it takes to be a good leader, is being willing to jump off that ledge and showing people that they can do it too, and that they're going to be okay, and that it makes a difference. So whether you're a big personality like me, or you're someone who's quieter but has exceptional leadership skills and has a wonderful organizational mind, all of those things are helpful and important.
That's amazing. And I love that you said that and talked about how really there's different personalities, because a lot of women feel like, oh, I have to be a lawyer and I have to be an extrovert and I have to have this specialized knowledge and this or that. And that is just not true. There's so many soft skills that are really more important. And especially the one you said about bringing people together, because these days that is a dying skill, right? To be able to actually talk to people with different viewpoints and come to some sort of agreement or compromise. And we really can't govern without that happening. And we can't have a country that's functioning or a state that's functioning if you're not able to get people together and come up with some sort of solution and compromise that everyone, maybe they don't love, but they're okay with it.
And what I'll add to that too is women sometimes think they have to look a certain way to be a public servant, to run for office. I have felt that myself. I don't fit those molds. I'm never going to look the way that maybe others think I think I should look all the time. I'm more comfortable and happier wearing ratty sweatpants than a suit. And so just getting comfortable with the discomfort and accepting, like really being able to accept that however you are, however you come, there is space for you. People bring so much to the table when they just step up. Like willingness to do the hard things and to put themselves out there, I would say is the number one skill they need. And then hard work, self-confidence, because you need it for the hard days, and communication skills. If you have that, go for it. Just go for it. That's what I would say to people. And for me right now, the fact that I jumped in and I told my husband this, I said, the other day, I could feel just in a few weeks of campaigning that I had changed personally, that I've become more confident in communicating with lots of different kinds of people. I've become more open and receptive to different ideas. And I'm growing as a person. And I said, no matter how this turns out, this has been good for me. And I think it's good for our family. So anyone who's thinking about it, who's wanted to do it, whether it's been 15 months or 15 years, like me thinking about it, I would say, go for it. We need you. We need you to be at that table. We need you to bring whatever it is you have and come as you are, because you're enough.
I love that the point you made about hard things, because you really can't grow unless you're willing to jump in and do hard things. And campaigning is one of those things. Running for office is hard, and holding office is hard. And all of these things are not easy things, and they take a lot of work and they take a lot of your soul, but it's good. From it, right?
And I'm trying to make sure that as I do these hard things, that my soul doesn't get harder. I think that can be a negative side effect, is when people are mean, and they can be in politics. They are. There are a lot of mean people who maybe they're just doing it because they think that they're defending their own values. So I'm trying to keep an open mind to that. But it's keeping your soul from getting hardened. Working with opposing counsel in litigation for so many years, you start seeing the other side as the enemy because you're fighting for your thing and they're fighting for their thing. And so they're the enemy. In the last few years, I've been listening to some information from, it's called the Dignity Index. It's a project to help Americans see each other with more dignity and communicate better. And it's helped me to keep my mind and my heart open to other points of view, even when people are unkind. And so that's my way of trying to inoculate against the getting a hard soul as I wade into these spaces.
That's another thing women worry about, right? That they're not tough enough. They have to be hard-souled, or whatever metaphor we're going with too.
Yeah.
To handle it. And I've talked to a lot of women about this. And one of my favorite metaphors, one of the women I talked to told me was, I'm just like a duck. I just let it ride off my feathers like the water. It hits me, but it doesn't hurt me and doesn't make me hard.
Okay, I love that. Okay, I'm going to use that now, because that is a really great metaphor.
Yeah, it's hard because the automatic reaction is to lash back or close off or anything when you're being attacked, and to keep an open mind and heart and still try to see the other side's perspective when they're being mean and awful. It's hard. Yes. It's hard.
It is hard. I don't always get it right. I don't always get it right, but I'm working on it. And to not personalize it, to be like, oh, you're mean to me. You're a horrible person. Okay. Maybe they're having a bad day. Maybe they're really passionate. Maybe they are just a really mean person, but that is the way. Yeah, I'm going to try to be the duck and just see that everyone needs to be treated with dignity. And the more I do that, the better I'll be in terms of my own growth as a human and hopefully as a public servant by seeing that there's a lot of value to a bunch of different perspectives, even if it's different from my own.
And being forced to do that every day, I think that's going to help someone become more Christ-like if every day they're trying to respond in a Christian manner and a kind manner, even though they're getting berated all the time. That's the goal, right? So it's not easy,
though. Spiritual exercise. Spiritual exercise. It's like doing your sit-ups every day. It's being nice every day, even when I don't want to.
Yeah.
It is a challenge. It's good for me.
Hard but good. Okay. We are almost out of time. It's been so delightful talking to you. I want to ask you if you have an invitation for our listeners to do something in the next week to prepare themselves or get ready to potentially run for office one day.
My invitation to them would to be, if you have that desire, acknowledge that desire in you and say it out loud. When I was making this decision, when the opportunity came up and I said out loud to people, this is what I want to do, saying that desire out loud to someone outside of my most immediate family was powerful, because then I opened myself up to people letting me know that they could help me, that they supported me, that they would be there for me. And so that would be my invitation. If it's been in your heart for a while, say it out loud to people. This is a direction you want to go, that it's what your dream, your vision is. And once you start telling people, you're going to find that paths start opening and opportunities start opening up. So that's my invitation.
That's a really great invitation. I love that. We haven't had anything like that before. And I think that's got to be so powerful to actually verbalize it outside of your comfort zone and say, I'm ready.
It changed my life. Yeah. It changed my life when I called up people who were in the campaign space and I said, this is what I want to do. And they said, absolutely, you can do this. But I hadn't been willing to say it out loud before. I just said, oh, someday I want to run, or, oh, I think that would be really neat. But when I said, I want to do this and I'm serious about it, it changed my life.
And you said you felt prepared for it. And sometimes women are waiting for somebody to ask them. But if you feel like it's time, you've got to be the one to go out there and say it out loud. So I appreciate you saying that instead of just waiting for someone to maybe knock on your door and tell you, you should run.
And that's what we often do. We wait for someone to recruit us. Let's recruit ourselves and let's encourage others around it. But say it out loud. Say, this is something I want to do. And then the opportunities, when they come, you'll be ready for it.
That's powerful. Thank you so much, Rachel. It was such a delight to talk to you today. And I appreciate you taking time out of your busy double job life to do this podcast.
I'm so happy to be here. I think that the work you're doing is incredibly important. And it's creating a movement. It's creating confidence. It's reminding us that as LDS women, that we have a place in our homes, in our church, but also in the greater community, and that we are powerful when we do it together. So thank you for facilitating these conversations. I think it's really powerful.
Thank you so much. And I hope to talk to you soon.
Thank you all for listening to Project Elected Podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to projectelectwomen.org. We're also on Instagram and Facebook as Project Elect Women. We'd love for you to subscribe, rate us, or give us a review on iTunes. So until next time, thank you.